Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. So the practice of Dhamma then can be extremely wide and diverse. So from the Western culture we will take a very narrow view of things, and purely because we don't see Buddhism all around us and Buddhism applied to every walk of life. And then we end up with this narrow view of it. We associate it with monasteries or meditation groups, or what we know of it, just a small thing. As if we've visited or lived in a Buddhist culture, and then we could have seen all kinds of things going on in the name of Buddhism, Buddhist art and Buddhist dance or Buddhist literature, all kinds of expressions of the Dhamma, as well as ways in which people would apply the Dhamma just to their ordinary life, one way or another. So it can be very valuable from this point of view to visit a Buddhist culture, but also to deliberately try to broaden out our view and try to apply Dhamma in every aspect, particularly in the sense of looking to channel our talents into the Dhamma. So if we try to change too much, we try to be a different person. This can happen as well, so I must try and become more spiritual person, different kind of person. I've got to change, they seem to change me. Then this doesn't really work either. You see people who've been involved in spiritual life a long time, then often they'll become more themselves. There is no mould. You meet the great monks, then you find that they're all extremely different. They're very much themselves. They're doing things in their way. They're not just a style, but can be radically different in the way they operate, according to what kind of person they are. Very shy or quiet monks, or grumpy monks, feisty monks, the whole colour of human life. This is also very important to understand, because sometimes we can idealise, have this ideal in our minds and think, the monk must always be happy and smiling. They're happy, smiling monks, or practitioners, and people who don't have that sort of character. Or sober or whatever. There are ups and downs in spiritual life, just the same as in ordinary life. More worldly life. Yet these ups and downs come for different reasons. So somebody's spiritual life can go up and down a bit if the spiritual affairs, things around them are going well or not going well. However, for somebody who's well practiced, who's been around the practice a long time, their inner life will tend to be much more stable. So even though they might manifest their ups and downs externally, if you talk to them about their inner life is much more stable. This is what we're looking for. They tend to be very solid people in one way or another. Again, not always in every way. Not always that a practitioner can be everything for everybody, but they'll have their strengths, develop their strengths depending what kind of practice they will have been into. There are all kinds of ways that you can apply the Dhamma, as I was saying at the beginning. And the other reason to channel one's abilities like this is that if you don't do this, you tend to try to change, then we lose our energy. So our energy is kind of caught up in things, certain things. You know, if we're into painting or something, we get into spiritual practice and we think, oh no, this is an indulgent thing to do. I don't think I should do this anymore. See that dreadful word, should. Then you give it up, and all the energy that it gave you will go along with it. So people can tend to be idealistic and then find themselves with no energy to put into the practice. So it's a matter of channeling one's energies rather than trying to stop them. So pretty much anything can be channeled to the good, particularly in the longer run. And if we can find this broader view of what practice is, and we can find an outlet for ourselves in it. So I've tried a number of these, painting and poetry and art, and I wouldn't say I was a photographer or an artist or a poet. So I'm a monk, but I use these things in order to investigate Dhamma. So I often see the trap here when I start talking to somebody and find that they're a painter, and I start talking about painting because I'm not really interested in painting as such. Don't look at other people's paintings much or read other people's poems. It's not because I don't admire these. I do. But if they're not to do with the Buddha's teachings, then there's not a lot of interest in them. No interest in a picture as such or a poem as such, and it's in its meaning. So this is a way we could end up getting lost, isn't it? We start getting into writing Buddhist poetry, and then it can pull us out, drift away, drift away from the Dhamma with our hobbies or our work, or it can take us straight back to it. Depending how we use it or what we do with it. There's also a benefit of being in a group of people is that when we can channel our abilities into the group, make a contribution to the group of one kind or another. We could give a talk or give an exhibition or a slideshow or something or other, in order to make a contribution. And as you're saying in a different way, a point that I often make is that Buddha talks about making a lot of our talents and our abilities, the wholesome side of our minds, making little of the problems and the difficulties, making light of them. In the Western context, we can't say this often enough, emphasize this too much. So it can be useful, a lot of fun to look at Thai Buddhist art, and a lot of cartoons. It's all very light and playful. Thai Buddhism is very light and playful. The attitude towards people's own personal particular interests is very liberal society. So I remember my brother told me that he met a soldier on duty in Bangkok, in full uniform in a parade in Bangkok, who was wearing ladies' makeup. It looked completely weird, and nobody was reacting against this. This man's hobby was that he liked to dress up and enter into these cross-dressing beauty competitions. And he didn't have time after this parade to do his makeup and get to this beauty competition, so he was wearing his makeup in uniform in the streets of Bangkok. And so it's not that Thai society, Buddhist society, is a stuffy one. It's not at all. It's a very open, liberal society, fun society. You know, the thing that they raise up more than anything is fun. If something's not fun, it's no good. When I was first going to Thailand, then my mother was reading an article in the Bangkok Post English newspaper about the Minister of Education, who was concerned that children were working too hard and were not having enough fun. So they were going to cut school hours and have longer play times to make sure that children had enough fun. A different attitude to the one in the West at the moment, isn't it? They're highly, highly pressurised. And yet we see that Thai society is not an unsuccessful one. People can work hard. They'll tend to have fun at work. They tend to work is about their friends, meeting with and chatting with their friends. Tend to make light of it. So I offer this one for your reflection.